From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
If asked, would you accept an invitation to be her running mate?
Well, I think, you know, I love being governor of Illinois. The people of Illinois have graced me with that title for the last two elections. And, you know, I'd be reluctant to make a change, but it'd be hard to resist a call and consideration if the nominee called me to ask to be considered for vice president.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker saying all the right things on CNN. He's reportedly under consideration to be Kamala Harris's running mate, one of several people being talked to. And we'll discuss that and more coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Kent Redfield, a professor emeritus and campaign finance expert at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also with us, we have Patrick Fingston. He's the author of the Illinois Political Newsletter. He's been a reporter and Republican staffer, and starting next week becomes the morning host on WMAY Radio in Springfield. Patrick, thanks for being with us, and congratulations on the new job.
Who says competitors can't be friends?
Yeah, we're all friends here. We're all friends. So let me just start by saying, Patrick, what a difference a week makes. Because the last time we sat down to record our show, you weren't with us, of course, but Joe Biden was running for re-election. Democrats seemed very deflated. Republicans were coming off a successful convention. They were confident. Biden's decision now to step aside seems to have rejuvenated Democrats. And no matter how you look at it, it seems like it's a different race. Is that a good way to put it?
It certainly seems like this played out the best way possible for Democrats. Everybody, Republican, Democrat, Independent, even if they believed that it was too late to switch candidates, if they believed Biden could still win, and I didn't at this point think Biden could still win, they knew that their path to victory was incredibly small, if not completely gone. So when the president stepped aside, two things could happen. One, he doesn't endorse anybody. You have a free-for-all open convention. All heck breaks loose on the floor of the United Center next month, and the Democrats go into the fall more divided than they already were. Or option two is the president endorses Kamala Harris and everybody gets in line. That happened. But in addition to that, she has ballooned and invigorated the Democratic electorate. She's, you know, she has done everything right in the last week to really make herself immediately look like a contender and not just the also ran or the second choice. She's really reshaping this race and really making Democrats excited. If the election were today, she would probably lose. It's still an uphill battle, and I'm sure we'll talk about the map. She's probably changing the map a little bit, which is still a challenge, but it's certainly a new day for Democrats in this regard.
Yeah, Kim, would you agree with that? And the fact that, maybe right now the polls are showing it very tight. She might lose if it was held today, but she's got some time to introduce herself and get her name out there and possibly build on that.
Yeah, I think this was their best option strategically. I don't think there's any question about that, the fundamentals were just terrible. Every day it was getting narrower, it was gone in terms of, you know, the route to win. And this, you know, this energizes some groups that Biden was struggling with, you know, younger voters, women voters, minority voters, you know. And now if you're adding those to what Biden brought, then you're ahead. You know, if you're trading one group for another group, you know, that's not what you need. They needed to really, you know, change the dynamic, and doesn't mean that it's, you know, it still could be really close and they lose it for whatever reason. It could be a disaster. I mean, who can predict in terms of how crazy things are? But this definitely, you know, gives them, you know, at least a, you know, a fighting chance, and probably more than a puncher's chance to turn this around.
Well, certainly Democrats have a big party coming up. And I got to say, as of last week, the Democratic National Convention, which will be held in Chicago next month, seemed like one of those parties that you'd call in at the last minute and say, I'm kind of sick. I don't really want to go if you were a Democrat. They were not enthused about this. But now I think that's changed a bit. Is that the way you see it, Patrick? I mean, Democrats, at least a certain majority, I believe, of the party is fired up right now.
Certainly, but I also think it's a new challenge for the DNC staff and what is now the Harris campaign. The world knows Joe Biden. He's been around. He was elected to the Senate literally, 7 years before I was born, 9 years before I was born. So he is, he is known by everyone. Harris has been very much on the back burner since she was elected vice president. I've heard a lot of focus group statements about her that only know that, one, they haven't seen her, and two, that she has not done very well as the quote unquote borders are. So they have not only a job of introducing her to the country, doing it effectively, courting independents, but also trying to do that in a month. These conventions are choreographed and scripted and videos made months and even a year plus in advance. Democrats have a month to do this. So it's a really tall task for them to do this and do this right in less than 30 days, essentially.
Kent, what do you see as her strengths and weaknesses? The border was mentioned there as one that Republicans certainly are painting her as the person in charge of the Biden border policy. I'm not sure if that's completely accurate, but it's certainly something that she's wearing right now. Do you see that as one of her weaknesses? And if so, what are some others and strengths?
I mean, obviously immigration is a huge issue. And so the fact that she got tasked with, I don't even know what the specific, kind of like you should be working on the countries where these people are coming from and how do we fix that part of the problem. I mean, they didn't put her down, sitting there, guarding the Rio Grande River or anything like that. But, all of the baggage, the things that the Republicans want to hit the Democrats about, she was Joe Biden's, vice president. And so, she's got to get herself out there and be known and then be identified with policy positions and solutions, to distinguish herself, and that's, it's a fine narrative to say, well, we need to cement Joe Biden's legacy. And and they'll be part of that, appealing to, the base there that was really happy with Joe Biden's presidency. But, she's got to go out and she has the opportunity to talk to, be known by younger voters, minority voters, more progressive voters, threading the needle on supporting Israel and at the same time, trying to talk in terms of humanitarian issues and Gaza and two-state solutions and stuff. There's some complex things out there. And if you don't get, really control the discussion and the narrative, then, what you're going to get from former President Trump and from J.D. Vance are a lot of taglines that have simple solutions, build the wall. You've got to go out and talk to people. You're not trying to convert Trump voters, but you're trying to get people to support you and to come out. I mean, the biggest thing that she does is provides enthusiasm. There are an awful lot of Democrats who are going to stay home because they've given up. She has an opportunity to energize that. And if you get them to get voters to actually vote, helps you at the top of the ticket, really helps you down ballot and stuff. And so, those opportunities are there, but we got debates coming up and a vice presidential pick, and there are lots of things that can go wrong in a hurry.
One thing that I think is worth noting, and anyone that's worked a campaign in the last decade would tell you that you know, you talk about Israel, you talk about border, you talk about policy, that doesn't matter like it used to. I mean, essentially, campaigns have become missions of feelings. And what Harris has done so far is bring a real cool factor, one that hasn't been seen since Obama jumped onto the scene. And I think that that's really re-energizing people that, you know, the and she has, you know, she's generally been pretty terrible on the Israel issue, but it really seemed like she acted like a grown up this week when she condemned the pro Hamas protesters that tried to scuffle with Capitol Police and you know, ransacked the area around Union Station in D.C. You know, so I think you're seeing she's starting to take the right track, where not only is she doing this introduction that is that's cool, that's interesting, that's starting to take Trump on directly, but she's also starting to maybe sort her policy positions out a little more in a way that's going to work more toward the center than the far left of her party. You know, I called her statement the middle finger to the pro Hamas protesters, and I think that's going to win her more votes than it's going to lose her Democrats.
Well, one thing I thought the Biden administration was not doing a good job of has been on issues of the economy. They will talk a lot of numbers, but there hasn't been that "I feel your pain" type of commentary coming out of the White House enough. Do you think that she's going to take a different approach, Patrick? Is this because this is another thing Republicans are going to hit her on, is the Biden, the inflation during the Biden administration?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, the president, you know, I think we can all agree, and he was not an effective messenger for his own policies and own whether you want to call it successes or record or failures or whatever it may be. You know, when he did interviews, when he could, you know, still get a sentence out capably, which has been less and less in the last year, he continued to talk about the greatest economy that we've had in the last 20 years or whatever it might be. And the reality is that the numbers on paper look good. The stock market looks good, but people don't feel that. Go to the grocery store, you know, see how much it costs for a box of Cheerios compared to 4 years ago. And that certainly is hurting him with middle class, working class voters. And they didn't have an answer to that. And it's not a hard answer to come up with. Again, it's a pretty simple campaign tool of we've made progress, but we still have work to do. And that's what I'm going to do in a second term. I mean, that's a pretty easy way for her to frame that argument. You know, I think anyone that goes to the grocery store can tell you how much more they're paying today than they were, you know, 2 and 4 years ago. The inflation issue has hurt everybody. And you know, it's not like prices are going to drop. We're not going to have deflation. And wages aren't keeping up with that level of inflation. So there definitely needs to be some work done from her policy shop in how do we do it? How do we make that better for people? Because you can't just command better wages. But there certainly has to be a change in how you level off the inflation, which has leveled off significantly, but also find a way that people can afford to live their lives.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our guests include Patrick Fingston and Kent Redfield. Well, Kent, let's turn to J.B. Pritzker. We heard him at the start of the show. He talked about sort of admitting that, without really admitting, that he has been contacted about at least being on a short list of potential vice presidential candidates for Kamala Harris. What would you see him bring to the ticket? I mean, he's certainly in a reliably blue state. And a lot of people are saying maybe they should go with somebody in one of these states where the race is really tight and maybe decided, like a Pennsylvania. So what does Pritzker bring? What would be the reason that somebody would pick him for vice president?
In past campaigns, you might have been looked at him and said, wow, this guy can, you know, self-finance, you know, $3-4 billion, whatever it is. And, you know, but I don't think anybody's going to lose, either side's going to lose this election because they've run out of money. You know, we've had a huge surge in both on both sides in terms of contributions and stuff. And so, you know, he has a solid record in terms of what he inherited at the state and where we are now. And, you know, and he's been an, a strong advocate in terms of reproductive rights. He's got a, you know, a, whatever it is, a nonprofit or a dark money group, you know, financing him being out working ballot initiatives and that sort of stuff. But, you know, all of this sounds like someone that might be a lot more helpful as a, you know, a targeted surrogate than someone that, you know, is going to either help you win a state or, you know, you're not going to have to spend a lot of time, you know, introducing him to the electorate. I mean, his name recognition is not very great. And so, you know, he really, in my mind, is, you know, a lot of things got to go wrong with the people that are the front runners at this point before, you know, he would, you know, he would be, you know, seriously considered putting him on the ticket.
You agree with that, Patrick?
Well, so we reported this week that he is very interested in the job. I talked to former Senate President John Cullerton, who said that he's had conversations with Pritzker about the job and that Pritzker is very interested. Of course, he's trying to say the right things and do the right things. He's playing very coy in terms of how he's handling questions about his role. You know, he denied a Sun Times report that he got called to gauge interest when the Sun Times story, from as I understand it, was pretty solid. You know, he's only doing, you know, these cable hits essentially where he's sort of auditioning, and then he says yesterday, well, I'm not doing tryouts for anyone. So he's really kind of approaching this in an interesting way. You know, there are clearly pros and cons for him and for the Harris campaign. The pro here is one, he's got a gazillion dollars that he can help you raise money, and that never hurts. Two is he is a very disciplined campaigner. He's very good on his talking points. He's very good on his feet. He's a more than serviceable person to go out and serve as your attack dog on Donald Trump. You know, and you can point out that Donald Trump isn't success. Donald Trump's a con man. This is what a successful real billionaire looks like. You know, that's a real contrast that you can point to between the two. The downsides here are that because he's such a rich billionaire, executive, governor, How does he really want to be a number two to somebody? I mean, he's got an ego. All politicians have an ego. They want to be in charge. They want to be in the room where it happens. They want to make decisions. And will he play nicely with people that he may believe in his heart that he's more qualified than to be there? So I think there's a lot of question marks on both sides. Then there's also the Illinois issue. Democrats are going to, you know, point to the credit upgrades and the balanced budgets. And I hear voters in Wisconsin falling asleep as I'm saying that. You know, they're going to, the thing that's going to resonate is crime in Chicago and, you know, not putting people in jail as quote unquote, as seen in the Pretrial Fairness Act or the Safety Act. And even if it's not accurate, which a lot of those criticisms aren't accurate, he's going to have some baggage that hurts him with moderate independent voters that Harris absolutely has to have. He's also a good surrogate on the abortion issue because he's all in on it. And to have a white guy out there singing the song that moderate and independent women want to hear could help them. So it's a really mixed bag. I do think generally, at least what in the last 30 years, the vice president to help you win a state argument has kind of gone away. The last time they tried it was when they wanted Al Gore to help Bill Clinton win Tennessee, and that didn't happen. So maybe that doesn't mean that they're going to go with Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania. I certainly think anything they can do to help win Pennsylvania is important, but that's a, I don't know that the diversity of ticket or geographical balance really matters like it has before.
Well, let me ask you, Patrick, because we talked a little bit before the show about here in Illinois and Kamala Harris now at the likely nominee for the Democrats. There has been a lot of enthusiasm among some Republicans that they're going to pick up some seats, not necessarily win control of the legislature, of course, but they're in such a super minority right now that they would try to pull that back a little bit, gain a few seats. You're not sure that's going to happen, though.
Well, so there's the House and Senate. The Senate is the way the drawing went for the Senate this year. There's really no competitive Senate race. In the House, there are a ton of competitive House races, and I've kind of predicted for a while that Republicans were going to lose seats, maybe as many as five. House Republican leader Tony McCombie said at the RNC last week, and I was kind of trying to press her on which seats she thought they could win, and she predicted that they could and would win five. I think that there are changes in the legislative map already that hurt Republicans. Kevin Schmidt is a state representative from the Metro East. Milstead is where he lives. It's essentially an East St. Louis based district. He upset Latoya Greenwood, a longtime state representative from East St. Louis, in 2022, and she's coming back this year. And Democrats are not skipping anything in that race. So if you have a reinvigorated African-American vote in East St. Louis in that area, women come out because they're inspired by Harris, someone like Kevin Schmidt's in big trouble. You have suburban women running against white men. There's an open race in the Elmhurst area that Democrats feel even better about. There are a couple of incumbent Republicans, Marty McLaughlin from Barrington Hills, who's running against a woman named Maria Peterson. The Democrats feel very good about winning that seat. So it's possible that if Harris increases turnout among African Americans and women, that it could be an even worse situation than possible or than previously expected for Republicans.
You agree with that, Kent? She may hurt the Republicans even more here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Republicans, you know, other than East St. Louis, you know, where are you going to pick up a seat? I mean, but what, you know, the Republicans have been losing the state because they've been losing seats in the suburbs. And so, you know, the Democrats, you know, give up, you know, a seat downstate, you know, to protect. So they just protect one person in a strong district, and then they pick up a couple of seats in the suburbs. That kind of math doesn't get you to a majority if you're a Republican. So the Republicans' problem is how do they get back to the position they were in the suburbs, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. You know, that's a really difficult thing to do. And
well, it starts with getting rid of Donald Trump. I mean, that's where it starts. I mean, that's what's killing them in the suburbs. That's the death knell right now.
It's just, you know, that on top of all of the demographic changes and things that took place and the brutal maps that the Democrats have. And, you know, it's very difficult. And, you know, Harris, if she increases turnout, you know, absolutely, that's, you know, that's just going to work to the Democrats' advantage.
Just about a minute left here, Patrick. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Republican National Convention. As you pointed out, it really showed how the Illinois GOP has changed. Give us sort of the overview of that.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, you've been to these conventions, and every day they have this state party breakfast, the delegation breakfasts. And traditionally, you know, especially on the Republican side, it's your old white guys in sport coats that come in and shake hands and backslap and talk about the things that, you know, we're feeling so good about our state and our Republicans and our conservative ideals and our, you know, our presidential candidate and top of the ticket. And the crowd, the elected Trump delegates look nothing like that. They are far more middle class, working class. You know, it was all red hats, it was beards, it was tattoos. It was a Republican Party that does not look like a Republican Party of yesteryear or of even 10 years ago. And when you hear the rhetoric, when you heard them talk about the things that mattered to them, it wasn't about abortion. It wasn't about taxes. It wasn't about guns. It wasn't about Republicans. It wasn't about conservatives. It was all about Trump. And it goes to that cult situation that we've talked about previously, where the Republican Party has just become the party of Trump. And it was clearly indicative of who voters elected to send to the Republican National Convention.
Well, also something we've been following a lot in the past couple of weeks has been the death of Sonya Massey. She was a black woman in Springfield, shot and killed by a deputy in her home after she'd called 911. This case getting a lot of attention, not just in Illinois, but nationally as well. And Kent, you expect that we could see some type of legislation come out of this incident. What we'll see, we're not quite sure.
Yeah, no, but it does, you know, the facts of the case are obviously terrible, then it also in people's minds say, okay, yeah, this is like what's been going on in Minneapolis and Memphis, and you know, just pick out the cities where you've had really horrendous confrontations with the police that have a strong, in people's minds, strong racial overtones. And so, you know, there will, you know, this is an opportunity then, and you saw the people in the Democratic Party that were, you know, pushing the Safety Act, you know, they're, you know, you're probably going to get some more legislation, whether it is, you know, something that everybody can agree to or more feel good press release stuff. But, you know, it's going to play out in the legislature, you know, when they get back in the spring.
All right, time for a note from the field. Patrick, we'll let you handle that.
I reported in my newsletter for subscribers this morning that there are some Republican insiders that are concerned about the GOP's best chance to take back a congressional seat this November. That's the 17th congressional district, which includes much of Northwest Illinois. Republicans are running a recently retired judge named Joe McGraw from Rockford against freshman incumbent Eric Sorensen, a former TV weatherman from the Quad Cities. Republicans are critical that McGraw has run a very immigration and law and order focused campaign in a district that is very heavily in manufacturing, very heavy in blue collar workers. And they feel like there may be, to use a specific quote, blowing an opportunity to flip their best chance. President Biden won that district by about 7 points in 2020. And McGraw's supporters say he's talking about the issues that matter when he's talking to people. Sorensen has a pretty healthy lead in fundraising, but is also seen by many, even by some Democrats, as too liberal, too progressive for that district.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for State Week. Our panel included Professor Emeritus Kent Redfield and Patrick Fingston with the Illinois Newsletter. And starting next week, you can hear him in the mornings on WMAY Radio. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.